This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Roger Hearing, and on this edition, suggestions a deal may be in the offing to roll back at least some of the 25% tariffs imposed by Donald Trump on Mexico and Canada. But has damage already been done to long-term trading relationships?
There is now a lack of predictability and a lack of certainty that NAFTA gave us since the 1990s.
And we'll have reaction from China to the additional tariffs imposed on Chinese goods going into the US.
I think we're going to hurt the US more than hurting China. Certainly, it doesn't help, but you're going to have a short-term pain. But the long-term, I think China's lifted up a tariff to zero for 40 least developing countries. The US is raising tariff, China is reducing tariff.
And we'll also find out how global markets are responding after a day of investor turmoil. Plus, Germany's moves to change its borrowing rules to accommodate huge new spending on defence and infrastructure. But first, Donald Trump said the new tariffs regime that he's put in place, 25% on goods from Mexico and Canada and an additional 10% on goods from China, could cause a little disturbance. Well, that disturbance has certainly been felt on financial markets. But has it perhaps been alleviated by signals from the US Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, that a trade deal with Mexico and Canada may be announced very soon? He was speaking to Bloomberg TV on Wednesday. This is what he had to say.
Remember, this is not a trade war. This is a drug war. We've got fentanyl still pouring into the country, and it's got to stop. And if they can stop the flow of fentanyl, the president is open-minded. There are going to be tariffs, let's be clear. But what he is thinking about is which sections of the market that maybe he'll consider giving them relief. But I don't want anybody to forget, April 2nd is the day that we announce our reciprocal tariffs around the world. And so April 2nd is coming, but this is about fentanyl this month.
Howard Lutnick there. Well, US markets have opened in the past hour or so. Joining me now here in the studio is Russ Mould, AJ Bell Investment Director. Russ, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure.
I mean, after what happened yesterday, how is it looking out there?
And Asia rallied overnight, and Europe has followed the lead in that respect because of this talk from Mr. Lutnick that there may be some sort of rolling back of these tariffs. And the sectors that are doing particularly well, the shares are doing particularly well, are things like materials, banks, automobiles, the small, more exposed sectors to the American policy so far.
And what about Wall Street itself? They've only been open about an hour, I think. Are we getting any indications?
A gentle increase after the heavy losses, so a degree of calm, which is probably quite welcome after the recent volatility.
I'm sure. Stay with us, Russ. We'll come back to you a little bit later. But let's talk now to Chris Campbell. He served as Assistant Secretary of the Treasury in Donald Trump's first presidency and knows him well. He joins me now. Chris, thanks for being with us. First of all, do you think this is again going to be something that happens and is then rolled back, a kind of, which seems to be the Trump style almost at the moment?
Yeah, look, I mean, as we spoke about before, the president tends to favor tariffs as a great way to disciplining negotiations. He certainly likes them. He calls it, you know, the best word in the English language. But the, you know, it does have real world implications on the economy. So to the extent that Canada, in this case, Canada and Mexico and China get serious about meeting the president's demands on lowering the influx and of fentanyl into the United States, and the president, I think, will match that that commitment on some basis on the lowering or elimination of the tariffs.
Okay, so Chris, I mean, what Canada certainly says is it's not our problem. You know, we don't put fentanyl through, and even Mexico says, well, we're doing an awful lot. Is this actually, do you think, more as a way almost of indicating the attitude towards these countries to make sure whatever deal goes through in the end is much more advantageous to the US?
Of course. And remember, the USMCA, which was originally renegotiated in the first term, the term I served with President Trump, is up for renegotiation in 2026. I think the president is looking forward to moving that deal or pulling that deal forward. There's nothing suggests that you can't renegotiate earlier than 2026 in the agreement. And so I think that he, you know, wants to strike a better deal. The president has always, and has been very consistent on this, seen and measured the trade imbalance in real dollar terms. And so because of that, he really wants to discipline the trade imbalance and pull that down as close to parity as possible, which is why I think last night in the joint address, he suggested reciprocal tariffs around the world. And so as countries that do business with the United States lower their tariffs, so will we lower our tariffs.
Yeah, definitely. The indicator, the signature move, really, I guess. Stay with us, if you will, Chris, because we're going to talk about, in more detail, China as well in a bit. But first of all, let's talk about Canada. On Wednesday, Canada asked to review the tariffs that the U.S. had imposed through the World Trade Organization. Meanwhile, the state alcohol monopoly in the province of Ontario announced it was pulling all U.S. products off its shelf. Here's how the Canadian broadcaster CBC reported the move.
The LCBO is pulling American products off its shelves and website in retaliation to Donald Trump's tariffs. The LCBO sells 3,600 products from 35 U.S. states, totaling about $1 billion, according to Doug Ford. More news in half an hour.
Meanwhile, if we head south, Mexico seems to be trying to work behind the scenes before it itself imposes retaliatory tariffs on the U.S. There is the prospect, of course, of real pain for exporters and importers on all sides. Here's Silvia Fillion, who's a Mexican mezcal producer in Oaxaca.
I do think it's going to be a problem because the U.S. is the biggest consumer of mezcal after Mexico in the world. So the good mezcal, the quality mezcal, it's going to become very expensive for the people in the U.S. So if they can't come to Mexico, they're going to stop buying it.
That's really going to hurt the farmers, isn't it?
Yes, it's going to hurt the farmers and it's going to hurt the culture and industry of mezcal.
But of course, it might not happen. How likely is a trade deal that will actually sort out the tariffs with Canada and Mexico? Vanessa Rubio is Mexico's former deputy finance minister, and I've been speaking to her about some of those involved in the talks.
I think it's a possibility. It's always a possibility, and that's precisely the central scenario on which President Claudia Sheinbaum is navigating the current circumstance. Unlike the reactions, for instance, from Canada and from China, Mexico decided to hold any action until Sunday. So that means that the Mexican government sees a window of opportunity between yesterday and Sunday to hopefully get an agreement done. And I think there always needs to be hope for an agreement to be reached. Because as we said, we're not negotiating a trade, we're negotiating actions on security and actions on migration.
And I know you've been following this and perhaps talking to some of the people involved. Do you have an idea of the shape of what this agreement might be?
Well, basically, it would be to know what exactly enough would mean to the United States in relation to actions against the cartels, actions against fentanyl, and actions in relation to preventing migrants from crossing the northern border of Mexico, the southern border of the United States.
But your president already in the previous month talked about doing things and sorting things out. Now, that didn't work, except to the extent that the tariffs were suspended. Is there really a lot more that President Sheinbaum can do?
I mean, it depends. There are a lot of specific actions, especially in relation to security, which are very intricate, very detailed, that, of course, I am sure they're on the negotiating table. They have to be in relation to exchange of information, exchange of intel, probable joint operations. Of course, also what happened last week in relation to the extradition of 29 high-caliber drug lords, including Caro Quintero and including the two heads of the Zeta cartel. So I'm sure there's a lot of actions in the horizon that they're negotiating. And the issue here is when to put a stop and when to say enough is enough. And this is what was expected in order for the tariffs as a punishment not to be implemented, no?
So do you think at the end of this, the idea is that there'll be no tariffs, in other words, back to the position right at the beginning, or perhaps just smaller tariffs?
Well, basically what I think is that structural damage has been already done. And the structural damage comes because there is now a lack of predictability and a lack of certainty that NAFTA gave us since the 1990s. There was a treaty that gave absolute certainty to investors, to those that wanted to make business, to those that wanted to trade in the North American region. And there is an effect on that that I think will be long-lasting and will affect prosperity in the region. So basically, having said that, I think there's always a possibility to reach an agreement. And you cannot expect that we go into an increasing spiral of tariffs on top of tariffs and on top of tariffs, because we will have the tariffs, then retaliation, then reciprocal tariffs, as the president said yesterday. So we cannot expect to this go to ad infinitum. We should stop this at some point in time. And the only way to stop it is through negotiations.
Mexico's former Deputy Finance Minister Vanessa Rubio there. Well, what no one in Washington is talking about at the moment is relaxing the tariffs on Chinese goods, now increased a further 10%. The Chinese Premier, Li Keqiang, acknowledged what he called an increasingly complex situation outside the country, which might affect trade. He was speaking at the opening of China's annual parliamentary session in Beijing.
Internationally, changes unseen in a century are unfolding across the world at a faster pace. Unilateralism and protectionism are on the rise. The multilateral trading system is experiencing disruptions and tariff barriers continue to increase.
Chinese Premier Li Chang there speaking in Beijing when he admitted that the achieving of a target of 5% growth would require, as I say, arduous efforts. So there's concern given China's current economic challenges about the trade war with the US. Well, I ask Henry Wang, president of the Center for China and Globalization in Beijing and former counselor on the China State Council.
I think this tariff latest round from U.S. is really counterproductive. You know, you're going to hurt U.S. economy and consumers, because China has been really, in the last 8 years, 7-8 years, has been experienced this tariff. And China still is going, capped GDP at 5%. I mean, this year and next year is also projected at 5% again.
But your premier, sir, has warned of an increasingly complex situation. Is that going to affect your economic prospects?
Well, I don't think it would be a big effect. For example, we had a first term when Trump was as president, the first term, he added 25%. But the bilateral trade has gone up 20%, you know. And the U.S. still suffer a big deficit there. So it doesn't really hurt Chinese economy because, you know, the bilateral trade since last 7 years, Trump 25% tariff, the bilateral trade has gone up 25%. So that means there's a big need from U.S. consumers. And then they're paying, you know, by the U.S. consumers for that tax, for that tariff. Basically, that's hurting U.S. On the other hand, China has increased its trade with ASEAN. ASEAN become a larger trading partner, and Latin America, Middle East, and Europe.
But your officials have described this as a trade war. Are you saying China can live with a trade war perfectly happily?
I think we're going to hurt the U.S. more than hurting China, basically what I'm saying. Certainly, it doesn't help, but you're going to have a short-term pain. But the long-term, I think, you're going to probably adjust the world economy. The rest of the world, 80% will trade more, and European countries, UK, Latin America, Middle East, Africa is trading more. For example, China, actually, while U.S. is raising tariff, China has lifted up to tariff to zero for 40 least developing countries. So I think, you know, China is doing the opposite. You know, the U.S. is raising tariff, China is reducing tariff.
But you mentioned a little bit of pain for China in this as part of the trade war. And this is at a moment when your premier has said that there needs to be a much bigger push. He talked about arduous efforts that would be needed to achieve the kind of targets and get Chinese consumers perhaps spending more. This isn't going to help with that.
Well, I think, you know, China now actually depends more, rely more also on a domestic consumption. That's what the premier said at the NPC section today, that they're going to stimulate more domestic consumption. So they have a 400 million middle class. They're probably going to have 800 million in the next decade. There's many ways to do that. So I think they're going to relax the fiscal spending. They're going to have more project invested. And then they're going to do more trade with the rest of the world. So I think, you know, China would weather this. And U.S. Trade with China is only 10%, 15%, less than that already. So it's not really a big picture for China now.
Henry Wang there. Let me bring in Chris Campbell, who's been patiently waiting, former Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Treasury. Chris, thanks for being with us still. We talked about Mexico and Canada, but what's the attitude, do you think, now to China? No sign, really, of anyone saying that the 10% should come off. It just seems to be a way forward for the Trump White House, doesn't it?
Yeah, look, the president's stated goal here is to move manufacturing away from China and China-adjacent countries and bring it back to the United States. With all due respect to your former guest, the American consumer is the economic engine of the entire world. China absolutely needs and must have access to our consumers. And if that access is cut off for any reason, trade barriers or not, tariff barriers or non-tariff barriers, it will dramatically impact the Chinese economy. And so there is, the president knows this well. And is using tariffs to again discipline our trading partners and allies and perhaps foes to doing the right thing. And so, maybe that changes over decades, but right now that is just absolutely the case.
And it's interesting, Chris, just to say that, I mean, we've heard many suggestions that there's going to be a phone call with Xi Jinping and Donald Trump and that much will be sorted out. No sign of that at the moment. Is it a kind of playing of chicken almost? Who's going to blink first?
Yeah, I think the president, has also prioritized our relationships and our very important trading relationships, but also economic and national security relationships with Mexico and Canada, getting our backyard effectively in order before we start looking extraterritorial. He's obviously trying to find ways of putting together the Russia-Ukraine potential deal and also working on the challenges of the Middle East. But China's going to be a totally different animal. Clearly he's pushing off trying to get maybe a larger deal with China, or perhaps what may lead into significant challenge, an increase in the significant challenge in China until much later, and so later in this administration, and so it's a real challenge, and China's going to be a real challenge. But I think it's something the president obviously is looking forward to. And as I would say, the president's always open to a big deal. And so if China's willing to be a partner in a solution, I'm sure the president would look to meet them halfway and try to find some way of path forward.
Well, something tells me that the word Taiwan might crop up in those discussions. And, of course, there we're opening up towards the whole world of microchips, microchip production, fears about the security of that. What position do you think Trump will take on that?
Well, that one's an easy one, because Taiwan Semiconductor has actually announced they're building very, very large plants in the United States, and then those industries that rely upon Taiwan Semiconductor chips, like Apple, for instance, have now coterminously building large plants in the United States. So we've had announced nearly $1 trillion of new investment in semiconductors specifically, and semiconductor adjacent in that process. So we're starting to see that manufacturing move already. It's only been 40 or 50 days in the Trump administration. Taiwan's going to be an issue. The South China Sea is going to be an issue. The Chinese investment that they've done internationally in locking up ports, what's happened in with the Panama Canal. There are many, 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 many topics that the president has in the U.S. has these China and President Xi.
Yeah, no, it could be very interesting when that phone call finally happens, couldn't it? Chris, thank you so much for being with us. Chris Campbell there, former Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Treasury, joining us here on World Business Report. You are with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Well, earlier we were talking about some of the reactions, of course, that were coming in terms of the tariffs on European stock markets, Asian stock markets, US stock markets as well. And I'm very pleased to say Russ Mull's still with me here in the studio. Let's look at one or two other things, which are, I suppose you might say, tariff adjacent. A lot to do with cars, of course. European Commission saying it's going to stick to its target that by 2035, all new cars and vans sold in the European Union would have to have zero CO2 emissions. emissions. And of course, we are talking, I guess, about electric cars, and China and electric cars and Europe are very much intertwined.
Indeed, but the European Commission's also given the car makers some room for manoeuvre in that fines will be applied from this year if they fail to start making their first targets for carbon emission reductions. But they'll only have to pay the fines in 2027. So that gives them 2 years to compensate for any shortfall that they have this year. So that does avoid some consultants' classic quantified the potential damage to car makers is up to €16 billion. So if you look again at the European stock market today, yes, maybe there's some relief on tariffs, but car maker shares are also responding to this breathing space they've been given. Renault up 4%, the Germans up 5%, and Stellantis of Italy up 7% on the Milan Exchange.
Interesting. And while we're talking about cars, again, and tariffs too, the US wants India, it seems, to eliminate tariffs on car imports altogether. New Delhi, a bit reluctant, apparently.
I would imagine so. I mean, India is looking to establish itself as a powerhouse in many different markets, and cars is one of them. So I'm sure that, again, they'll be looking to get the best deal that they can as part of these very complicated negotiations.
And meanwhile, of course, if we look back across the Atlantic, the big thing that everyone is talking about, really, I suppose, is the health of the US economy. We touched on it a little bit earlier. But an indicator, US private sector hiring gains have been the smallest since July. Now, you know, there's the thing of, oh, the economy's overheating. Well, it's certainly not doing that, is it?
No, we've got an interesting collection of data. We've seen consumer confidence weaken, inflation expectations go up, manufacturing orders go down, trade deficit go up as imports have accelerated. Now, jobs are a little bit of weakness. There is a suggestion a lot of this is companies preparing for the imposition of tariffs and trying to take evasive action and get ready. So what you're likely to get is some really noisy, really messy economic data from America in the first and second quarters of this year. The Atlanta Federal Reserve is now suggesting the American economy could shrink for the first 3 months of this year. No economist is forecasting that, I can absolutely guarantee you. But because imports are rising, that subtracts from the overall GDP calculation and means the numbers look bad. And that may be one thing that could be focusing minds in the White House, because the one thing the stock market doesn't expect to see is the American economy slowing down.
And briefly, that awful word, stagflation. I saw it on the front page of the Financial Times this morning.
Back to the 1970s, nobody wants to see that. It was a terrible decade for investors, unless they were sat in a big pile of gold.
Oh, well, thanks very much anyway, Russ, for talking about that with us. Russ Mould there, joining us here on World Business Report. Now, the man who is likely to be the next German Chancellor has announced a political deal to raise hundreds of billions of euros in extra spending on defence and infrastructure. And what's really interesting about this is that Friedrich Merz is planning to alter one of the fundamental pillars of German state economics in order to do this. Merz, whose Conservatives won Germany's election last month, said he and his likely coalition partners from the centre-left will put new proposals to Parliament next week. The US actions over Ukraine have pushed countries like Germany to reconsider their defence priorities. And Mr. Merz said Europe needed to grow up and defend itself.
Erstens, angesichts der weiter zunehmenden.
In view of the increasing threat situation, it is clear to us that Europe and Germany must now very quickly make big efforts to strengthen our defence capability. I want to be very clear here. Whatever it takes must also go for our defence now, in the view of the threats to our freedom and peace on our continent.
Friedrich Merz there. Well, I'm joined now by Wendelin von Bredau, who is senior German correspondent for The Economist. Wendelin, thanks for being with us here on World Business Report. I mean, the thing I was talking about, this fundamental pillar, is something that they need to change in the Constitution. It's all to do with the amount of debt that Germany can have. Can you just explain what it is?
Yes, absolutely. It's called the debt brake, the Schuldenbremse, and it is enshrined in the German constitution, as you say, and says that the annual budget deficit cannot be more than 0.35% of GDP. So basically, the budget needs to break even. And what Merz has done, or what he's proposing to do, is to exempt defense from these very strict fiscal rules and say that anything beyond 1% of GDP, any spending that is required to meet, say, the 2 or 3% target that NATO members should achieve, will be exempt from these fiscal rules. But this requires changing the constitution, or at the very least, a constitutional amendment.
And he has to get it through the Bundestag. It's quite a big ask, isn't it? Is it two-thirds, I think, that have to be in favour?
Absolutely. It is two-thirds. And he's hoping to have to get these two-thirds in the outgoing parliament, the outgoing Bundestag, which is still convening until the 25th of March. And then the new team is coming in. In the new Bundestag, he's unlikely to get the two-thirds required. So that's why he is rushing. There's such a rush to get this voted.
Yes, and I saw some quotes earlier from Die Grüne, the Greens, saying they strike a very hard bargain, and it was by no means certain in the current Bundestag that they would support it.
Absolutely. They are playing hard to get. They feel they haven't really been consulted. The problem is they agree on the substance, but it's more. I mean, they are not part of the next government, and they feel a bit left out. So I think they'll probably come round. But I also think that Friedrich Merz will have to make some concessions to the Greens, because they say in these big plans to spend 500 billion on infrastructure, which is the other big item, so defense and infrastructure, there's too little or hardly anything on climate change, and they want this modified, and that's sort of their condition for voting for the proposal.
And of course, the problem, I guess, is confidence. I mean, the whole reason that a debt break is in there is to engender confidence, and that helps when Germany borrows money on the international money markets. If this changes, that could change as well.
Indeed. And you have seen the bond markets react instantly, and German borrowing costs have gone up. So German fiscal prudence has a long tradition, and it sort of also plays to the German mindset. So this is something quite hard for many Germans to accept, who are very proud of their fiscal rectitude. And most understand that these are extraordinary times that require extraordinary measures. But the way Merz is going about it is unorthodox, because he's pushing this through a very big reform through the outgoing Bundestag, which I think has rarely, if ever, happened in the history of the Federal Republic.
So do you get a sense this will go through and that people will accept it just because of the extraordinary time?
I think it will go through, because I think the Greens will come round. He will make some concessions to the Greens, and it will go through. As for public opinion, yes, I think there's a strong current who is opposing it, but I think the majority are behind it.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see if indeed it does. But thanks for joining us on World Business Report. That's Wendelin von Brada there, senior German correspondent for The Economist, talking about that move to change the German constitution so that the German government can actually borrow more than it has been able to in the past. And we'll see if that goes through. All to do with defence, of course. And that's it from World Business Report. Thanks very much for being with us. Bye-bye.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates. Fly better.